Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Fourth Age podcast. Rejoining you this week, I'm Jason, and I'm joined here also with Andrew and Virginia. Andrew, Virginia, hello.
Hello.
Hello. This would be Andrew Miller this week.
Oh, yes, Andrew Miller. We do have more than one now, don't we? For this episode, we are going to be discussing two things. The first thing we're going to be discussing is some big news, especially for anyone that doesn't go to our sponsor, DragonMount.com, very often. The Wheel of Time, book number 12, A Memory of Light, is going to be finished by Brandon Sanderson. We're going to talk about him in just a couple seconds. We're also going to be using our topic of the week this week, and we're going to be speaking of the IEL.
Well, I don't really know that much about Brandon Sanderson either. I am embarrassed to say I have not read his books either, but I have started to read them. I've just started Mistborn, and also on BrandonSanderson.com, he has graciously provided us with an entire manuscript that he's working on called Warbreaker, which anybody can download and read. This is version 4.0. And he also has a lot of sample chapters on his website, too. I really enjoyed the interview with him. He sounds like a really cool guy. Hopefully we'll get to know him more as time goes on. He seems like he's very accessible to the fans. He has a complete blog that he keeps up on his website, and he just recently posted a new frequently asked questions section. And of course he's being deluged by email because of his newfound Watt fans. So that's really all I know about him. He seems like a very talented person, and I'm excited to read more of his stuff.
One thing I really love about his website is in the top left-hand corner of his blog, he actually has a production schedule kind of meter type thing where he actually shows you what he's working on and what percentage it's at. And when I went to his site, when I first read the news, he had Wheel of Time, Memory of Light read-through 1% done, and I got really excited when I saw that.
Yeah, I think he said he has to read through all of the books, starting with the first one, so that he's really up on everything. And in the fact that he just posted, he talks a lot about the notes and chapters written that Robert Jordan left for him and how he plans to approach it. And obviously he signed a non-disclosure agreement, so he can't tell us anything. But he did promise that the killer of Asmodian will be revealed. I thought that was really exciting.
Oh, that's very
exciting. He
said
that Jordan had actually never intended... Yeah. He said that Jordan had never actually intended to reveal the killer because he thought it was just obvious from reading the book, as we all know. And it seems that he said that over the years it had become apparent to him that it wasn't obvious to everybody, and he had determined at some point in time that he was in fact going to reveal that little detail in one of the last books. So he and Harriet have evidently figured out the appropriate place to put it in A Memory of Light. So that little discussion topic will be settled once and for all. I must confess it wasn't obvious to me. I have my guesses like everybody, but...
Well, if it's obvious, it had to be Death took him, so Morden, whose name is Death, would be the obvious slap in the face, but that's probably the general argument. I know I said I was going to sit out, but I have some questions, because like, who is Brandon Sanderson? Like, he's got a book, you said, Mistborn, and it's a series. I guess it's got some acclaim. I'd never seen it on a shelf myself, but I don't frequent the bookstore too much. Is he a disciple of Robert Jordan, or is he just a fan and a good author? Like, who, through and through, is this guy that the public should know?
Well, evidently he wrote an obituary or a eulogy for Robert Jordan, and it came to Harriet's attention, and it sort of proceeded from there. But as far as I know, he's just been a fan of the series and an up-and-coming author who credits Jordan as one of his major influences.
I was just going to say that I don't really know specifically the answer to the question. I think, Virginia, you know more than both of us do, but I will say this, though, is by the time we do another podcast, I will know more about Brandon Sanderson. I'll guarantee that.
Well, I've had a lot of fun going through his website. It's quite a complete little not little, actually it's quite a complete website. And like you say, it has the little meter of what he's working on, which I thought was pretty cool too. I've never seen anything like that, and I really like it too.
And just as a little aside, I know who killed Asmodean.
Oh, good. So reveal.
It's been confided in you?
No, nobody confided in me, but one of our previous episodes was about this. It was about who killed Asmodean. I think people waited. I think it was like
yes, I remember. 15,
14 or 15, and people were begging us to do it. So there's only one person that it could be, and it's Grendel. She's the only one that could have did it.
Well, that's what I've always thought too, but I can't be sure about that.
Well, she's the only one in the books that knows he's dead. She's the only person that knows he's dead. And to me, that's...
What did she say?
To me, that's dead. Actually, she says it in Lord of Chaos when she's talking to Samael. He asks what happened to Asmodean, and at that time, I believe it was Mogideon. God, I butcher the pronunciation for every time, but you get the point. You see, he asked where Asmodean and Mogideon, that's it, where Asmodean and Mogideon were. Yeah. He asked Grendel, and she said that they're both dead, and nobody else knows that he's dead. Rand doesn't know where he is. He assumed that he just escaped, and Rand isn't really too worried about it, but she's the only one that knows he's dead. And I think that in a court of law, if you're the only person that knows someone's dead, you gotta look at that person a little closer.
I think it was just prior to that, when Asengar and Arengar introduced, they talk about Asmodean being killed. And this is, I think this is prior to Grendel and Samael confronting. I'll have to check, because I just read through those books, and it's the feeling I got out of the timeline. But it was known to the Dark Lord that Asmodean was dead, and he was mentioning all the other people who had been killed, like Raven by Balefire and Belial and stuff. But since it was introduced at that point in time, maybe it was just assumed to be common knowledge, or maybe it was a distraction tactic to, you know, make you not notice the fact that Grendel knows. I don't know. I do have to comment that Grendel doesn't. I don't think she indicated she had recently been to Shale Gull. So I don't know if she's been in contact to get that information, whereas a couple others have obviously gone there and been promised Nablus or not.
You know, she was in Lord of Chaos. She was at Shale Gull because she received instructions from the Dark Lord that she passed on to Samael, who was not summoned to Shale Gull, not to kill Rand. She passed those instructions on to him in Lord of Chaos.
Right, I remember that. Yeah, she does seem like the obvious person, but I wouldn't presume to know Robert Jordan's mind. He's obviously a lot smarter than I am to be able to keep all these many threads in these books together for so long and make it interesting all this time.
I think one of the things that throws everybody off is Robert Jordan said it should be obvious, and I think that throws everybody off because at that point in the books, Morden isn't even a figure. He's not. I'm halfway through in my reread. I'm halfway through Lord of Chaos, and he's still not in. And Lord of Chaos, of course, is the book after Asmodean is killed. So, up to this point, even in my reread, he's not obvious because you don't even know that he's a character yet.
Well, all I can say is that when Robert Jordan says it's obvious, it reminds me of a cartoon that I saw many, many years ago about a couple of scientists standing in front of a big, huge mainframe with blinking lights and everything, and reams of data flowing across the screens and everything, and one of them saying to the other, well, it should be obvious to the meanest intelligence, ...
Elementary, my dear Watson, right?
It wasn't. Yeah, exactly. It's obvious if you're a genius.
I'll tell you what, though, there's a really good theory on Encyclopedia-Watt that during the time, right before Asmodean is killed, and Rand is fighting with Ravine. There's mention that all the servants had left the palace, that Ravine was prepared for Rand's arrival, and all the servants were out of the palace. It was completely empty. But during the fight, there are two, a male and a female, servants that are in the hallway. And it just turns out that that's the same hallway that Asmodean walks through, and that's the same hallway where that infamous wine closet is, that's where Rand sees the two servants. So their theory there is that the two servants were Samael and Grendel that were in the palace there with Ravin, and they were waiting to see who was going to win, if it was going to be Rand or if it was going to be Ravin. And because they could not immediately leave the palace, because obviously Rand was there, so Samael would have felt him channeling, and Avienda was there as well, who would have felt Grendel, that they were waiting for an opportunity to leave. So since they were in that hallway, Samael did leave somehow. It's been a week since I read it, so I'm not sure what happened to Samael, because he obviously doesn't know what happened to Asmodian, but the theory is that Grendel was hiding in the closet when Asmodian went in and saw her.
I have a wacky theory that was emailed in from a fan. This comes from Nick, he signs off Nick, but his email says from Steven Casanova, which I don't know which one he is, but that's him. This is what he writes. Hey guys, I was listening to the Asmo episodes over again, just as a time waster, and something crossed my mind, and even though I still agree with that Grendel is the most likely suspect, here is something for us to all chew on. During the podcast, someone said Moraine couldn't have killed Asmo because she was trapped by the Finns. However, the doorway that she went to was the doorway to the foxes, and from Matt's experience with them, I think it's safe to say that, to an extent at least, they grant requests. Now, Moraine knew about Asmo being with Rand, and she wasn't exactly happy about it, as if I recall correctly. Isn't it possible that she asked for a means to kill him, and that being trapped there is the price she has to pay? It's also possible that Moraine knew exactly which wine cellar to find him in, because none of us know everything that she saw at Ruidian. Just something to think about, Nick. I just thought I'd throw that in there because, you know, honor the fans.
No, I like the theory a lot. It kind of, sort of flies in the face of obvious, but it's not exactly the worst theory that I've heard either. She would have a means to, she would have a want to have him killed, and obviously she would have the means if they granted her request.
If the authors have said that it must be obvious, I would probably tend to disagree with that theory. I don't mean to be a naysayer, but there's nothing in the theory of Moraine killing him that would say it's obvious. I mean, obviously, all the Forsaken know that Asmodian's at Rand's side, and Moraine knows, and I don't think anyone else does. So that's too broad a group to say, okay, it's obviously Moraine. I mean, every one of them would kill him given a chance. So I would probably go back to probably the Grendel Samael one, or Moradin.
I'd have to agree with that. I don't think it was obvious that it was Moraine at all.
However, I was just going to throw this in.
Okay.
Either Howlin Nori or Renee Corley, the two people in charge of the palace, I think would be hilarious if it was one of them.
I've had my doubts about Halwyn Nori from the start, actually. I've wondered about him. The only reason that I don't think he's, you know, one of the Forsaken masquerading as they so want to do is that really about the only one we're really worried about is Demondred, and Robert Jordan has apparently said in an interview that we haven't met he hasn't been any character that we've met already. Something of that nature. I've forgotten the exact wording. But I just read that part about the battle in Camelin and Ravin, and I didn't pick up on the two servants at all. And that flies in the fact of my latest sort of operating procedure, which is that nothing that Robert Jordan put in those books was casual. Nothing.
There was a point where he was in the hallway, and he was looking at two servants, and he was telling them repetitively, "I won't harm you, I won't harm you," and yeah, something odd about the encounter.
But if they were masked by the Mask of Mirrors, then Grendel must have dropped it when she went into the closet, because Asmodian clearly recognized whoever was there. Because he goes, "You! No!"
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, either why would she have been masquerading under the Mask of Mirrors and then let it go? Wouldn't she have just kept it in case she ran into anybody?
If I was Samael, I would definitely remove the competition, and Asmodian teaching Rand ways to use the power is, you know, obviously one of Rand's strategic strong points at that stage in the game. So removing Asmodian from the picture stops Rand from learning more. Moradin has complete loyalty, obviously, to the Dark One, and Asmodian going over and helping Rand is kind of a betrayal to the Dark One, I would say. So why
just
wouldn't it be Moradin? Yeah, and remember how Moradin was following Samael and Grandal when they went to first meet with the Wise Ones together? Right after Dumai's Wells, the Wise Ones are all sitting down and they channel mm-hmm. into the call box and they show up and Moradin's following them. He's swathed in some kind of cloth, which I think is like the water cloth. And
yeah,
stuff
fan
like that.
Cloth. Right.
Yeah. So Moradin can get around quite, you know, carefully, and he doesn't have to channel the one power, he just channels the true power. Well, is there a theory that it was possible that it was either the Golem, obviously, is a good assassin for those kind of people, or Slayer? Slayer steps out, kills people all the time, disappears.
Yeah, that would be my next guess after Grendel, actually. Far more than Moraine.
Before we go too far, we should probably wrap it back around to Brendan Sanderson and or the audio.
Yeah, we could probably talk about it all
day. I take full responsibility for having sidetracked us onto Asmodian. I was just tickled when that was part of his little fact.
No, I...
Well, no, we'll actually know.
I would definitely encourage everybody to go back and listen to the Asmodian episode as well. And even with the new podcasters that we have, we can go over it again. I really love the theory on encyclopedia-watt.org. It's called Bob's Theory. So you can find it if you go to the chapter listing and you go to how I find it. I just go to Glowing Embers, which is the name of the chapter, and in the notes at the very bottom, there's a link to it. So read that, and everybody listens to the podcast can read that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. But the topic of the week is the Aiel, and I don't know where to start with the Aiel. It's the people of the dragon. What do you two think?
What is the number one reason you want to be an Aiel? We'll start with Jay.
Oh,
glad you didn't start with me.
Oh, that's a great question. Why would I want to be an Aiel? Because they're badass. I'll leave it at that.
That wraps it up pretty well, yeah.
I confess it would be because I could have two wives or more, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's just two.
Oh, I agree with Matt. It might be a blessing or probably is a curse.
I'm not sure I'd want to be an Aiel, to be honest with you. I have an absolute loathing of really overly warm places, so I would not like being in the Threefold Land.
One of the things I notice about the Aiel is that, other than the Shaido, or maybe even with the Shaido, family and Jitto seem to be everything. You might see disagreements, but you never really see the hate or anger or, you know, I mean, it's all clear, like, what your role is in life and what you're expected to do is pretty clearly defined. I mean, hell, people get taken guy shine that are married, and then they just go away for a year, and then they come back, and there's no complaint. It's not like, you dumbass, you got yourself taken guy shine. It's like, you know, you're fulfilling your obligation, you know, your honor. Now, I mean, you don't really see much in the way of the Aiel, you know, cheating or, you know, like, adultery and stuff like that, because, I mean, your wife will stick you with a spear. You really don't want to cheat on her.
Or notch your ears or something.
And financial, you know, stability is not something someone provides. I mean, you just fight for the clan, and you've got a roof, and you've got water if you can get your hands on it, and most of it's focused on wartime and raiding, whatever the clan chiefs and sept chiefs say. I mean, it's a pretty organized society, quite civilized compared to most of the other parts of the world. It just structured around surviving in the Threefold Land.
Yeah, but look what Roland told Fael about when you're Guy Shane. It's basically he told her what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, sort of thing. You know, what happens as a Guy Shane is not important afterwards. So, you know, he's like encouraging her to have an affair, even though she's told him over and over again that she's married. And
but that's not an affair to him.
I know, but it's like they have this whole little mode of cheating and everything that's all codified. It's very strange when you think about it. I mean, you do anything that you do as Guy Shane didn't happen when you're done. You know, what if she got with child or something? That could be really awkward.
It could be. But if I had two wives and got taken Guy Shane, and it didn't matter that I comforted my owner, or not owner, where it was my master, I guess. I don't know what you call them from a Guy Shine's point of view. And then I went home. It wouldn't be considered cheating. I mean, you're, I don't know, in the neutral zone.
I don't know. They'd probably beat the heck out of you when you got back for be allowing yourself to be taken. How do, they didn't. They Possibly. Don't ever seem to have anything to do with divorce or any of that thing. There doesn't seem to be any mention of couples splitting up or growing apart or any of the sort of things that happen in our society.
I don't know. I'm sure if people grow apart, there must be some kind of divorce ceremony. I mean, you may a woman. The fact that the woman's the one that lies the bridal wreath usually gives me the impression that she would really know what she's doing before she takes any kind of action, like getting married. I mean, a man will propose on a whim, this is my personal opinion, not saying this is the way life is, it's just some depression I get, but men will propose on the drop of a dime just to, you know, just to make a woman stay with him because he's lonely or scared of losing her. If a woman's ever to propose, she's damn sure that she wants to marry this person. And in the IL culture, it is the woman who asks the man to marry her. So it seems like there's a lot more wise decisions made there.
I suppose. But I think it's kind of strange that then she can just decide if she wants a sister wife. You just get landed with her whether you want her or not. They don't seem to leave a lot of the choices up to the men, do they?
One thing about... And as far as divorce and separating, I don't even think that's the IL ever probably even thought about that. I mean, if you think about, like, Bane and Chayad, for instance, they were taken, Guy Shine, and instead of escaping with Fael, they actually remain Guy Shine because of Jieto. So I don't think, I think that would be a huge violation even to think of it. So I don't even think it ever even entered their minds, to be honest.
And the other thing, too, is a lot of them may not live long enough to have to worry about growing apart.
That too, I mean,
it's a tough place to live, and they're always fighting with one another. So
now, did I lose track and miss it, or did you try to not say what your number one reason would be for being a Aiel, Virginia?
I tried to get by that.
And you out.
I didn't succeed. Well, I find that I like the idea of the Maidens of the Spear. I like the idea of the martial arts that they practice and the fact that women can be so completely competent, you know, and basically do all the same jobs that the men do. And I have to admit that it would be pretty cool to be a wise one because they seem to have a lot of authority. And, you know, there are some cool things about it, but I think it would just be a really difficult society for me to live in. It's so structured, and I just sort of make things up as I go along.
So, serious question before we go any further, because I have some questions that are going to be related to the Aiel, but this one's very specific to Sulin. Is Sulin Rand's blood brother as a daughter of Yanduin? Because when he first gets taken by the Aiel, she moans out loud that her first brother has been taken. And as we know, her first brother is her blood brother of the same parent, as far as I know.
I never thought of that. That's interesting.
I think in...
She might be.
I think when... because Rand is the son of a Maiden of the Spear, and when with the way that it is if a Maiden of the Spear has a child, the child is taken away from them, and if the child returns back, that has only happened once, and Rand is that person, and it just escapes me now if it's the first if he's considered first or second brother. I think he may be considered first brother because he's the offspring of a Maiden of the Spear, and he came back to the Maiden of the Spear, so I think they all actually considered him first brother.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I always thought that was a rather metaphorical reference, but they've basically all adopted him. All the maidens, because, and remember when they go and they punish him for leaving them behind yet again, they say that this is how we would, you know, treat a first brother who dishonored us. You know, the next time we'll use straps, you know. they all basically adopted him. Some of them treat Rand as though he is their son, and others treat him as though he's an older or younger brother, so they have a very close relationship to him, but I don't think it's an actual, you know, mother-father physical relationship. I think they basically just adopted him. That's my thought, anyway. I've always liked Sulin. She's one of my favorite Aiel.
Well, I guess that kind of explains my next line of questions was basically when Rand goes to the rebel army camp outside of Cary Ennin, where High Lord Darlin and what's the lady's name?
Lady Caroline. Lady
Caroline.
Damodred. Damodred.
Yep, and the Lady Caroline Damodred's army camp, and Padan Fain and Tor Amriat, and they're there first introduced to us as a pair. Bran gets injured and gets brought back, and when they finally bring him to his apartments, all the maidens up in front of the apartments are demanding what happened. They're moaning, they seem distraught, terribly affected whenever Rand is injured. Is it because of their perceived relationship with him, or because they carry his honor? I'm a little confused, as Aiel are a bit confusing.
I think it's both. I think both because they consider him a brother, because he's the only offspring of a maiden that came back to them. And I think a lot of part is when he said, and almost not knowingly, that the maidens carry his honor. I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They sort of remind me of the almost the Secret Service, you know, where they're just constantly trying to keep after somebody who's just determined to elude them and get himself into all kinds of trouble, and it just makes them crazy because they're supposed to be protecting him and carrying his honor, and he just runs off without him.
Why has he never asked how to get out of that? I mean, I'm pretty sure you can't say, this person carries my honor, and then, like, when you're graying 300-year-old eyes that I mail, they're still carrying your honor to that day. There's got to be a way of politely saying, okay, I don't need you to carry my honor anymore. I can carry my own.
Oh, I think that would shame them under Jia Toh unmercifully. I think they'd react to that really badly.
So it's a permanent condition? They have no other obligation to anyone else but Rand?
I don't know. He's the Karakarn. There's never been anyone like him before. A Karakarn. I'm not sure. I'm probably butchering that name. He's the first one ever. There really aren't any rules to deal with him. But they certainly seem very determined.
So, at this point, I'm going to turn back to Jason and ask you the flip side. What's the number one reason you do not want to be an Aiel?
I would definitely not want to be Gaishan. No way. No way, no how.
You could be a blacksmith, then.
Wow, that's true. That's true.
I don't think
I'm cut out to be a blacksmith.
Did they say that blacksmith can't be Gaishan? Because there's other ways to become Gaishan. Like, speaking of your... if someone's mother-in-law, before they mention it, can make you Gaishan if they touch you. Just because you've dishonored them, and then they have the ability to claim that the toe that you owe them by making you Gaishan. I remember that specific lesson that Avienda had tried explaining to him, and he kind of wondered, what the hell? Like, why would you be made Gaishan just for mentioning someone's mother-in-law? But it can happen. So, and I've heard of roof mistresses who obviously don't stab people with spears. They can be made Gaishan. Why not a blacksmith?
I don't remember. Maybe I'm wrong. I seem to remember that a blacksmith and a child under a certain age and a woman who's expecting or something cannot be
pregnant.
Yeah. Cannot be made Gaishan, but I'm pretty sure the blacksmith. And then there was something about a silversmith. You had to allow her to work one day for every two or something like that for herself. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. They never did explain why. She asked him. Avienda is telling Rand all the things that he doesn't know. She goes, well, why do you have to allow a silversmith to work one day for every one of yours? And she never says why, but it's very complex.
I'm expressing my ignorance of the fact that I don't remember the comment where they said blacksmiths can't be made Gaishan, so maybe blacksmiths are just way too valuable for the weapons and spearheads that they require and the studding in their bucklers. Okay, so you don't want to be Gaishan. Virginia, why don't you want to be a Aiel?
Well, I have to agree with Jason. I really would not like to be Gaishan either. I wouldn't have a very easy time being meek and obedient and doing all the manual labor and everything. But I think the number one reason I wouldn't want to be an Aiel is because I would hate living in the Threefold Land. I don't love deserts at all. I don't like hot. I don't like any of that. No. That would just absolutely be horrible. Unless I could be with the Shido in the rich, fat lands of the wetlanders, I think I would not want to be an Aiel. I like the martial arts, but I don't like the hot.
To answer our questions, I just looked it up, and wise ones, blacksmiths, children, and women with a child under the age of 10 cannot be taken Gaishan.
There you go. I wouldn't want to be a blacksmith either, though.
Too much hard labor?
Yeah. Well, it just doesn't appeal to me. I've done plenty of physical labor jobs in my life, but it just doesn't appeal to me. I like working with metal, but not as a blacksmith. I'd rather do casting and things like that. I don't want to make horseshoes.
So, there's a prevalent factor that I don't know if it's been discussed, because again, actually I shouldn't say again. For many of you out there who don't know me, I'm an avid Wheel of Time fan, but I'm not engrossed in the community 100%. People probably haven't heard my name or seen a post from me. I don't post very often. I can't sit at a computer and read tons of research, but when I make this comment, it's with the ignorance of not knowing what the community's discussions have been. There are 13 Aiel clans. Why are there 13? There's 13 Aes Sedai required to link, and then beyond that you need a man. 13 Aes Sedai can shield any man. 13 Mirandiral are required to turn somebody to the Dark One. I don't know if turning them to the Dark One, that's another thing, never mind. But the number 13 comes up a lot in these books. Does anyone know the history or the reasoning why? Is because the number 13 is unlucky or something?
Well, the number 13 and the number 7 as well are just in history of Norse mythology and just mythology in general is, I wouldn't say an unlucky number. It's a significant number, though, which is used a lot. So, and I know that Robert Jordan pulled from a lot from Norse mythology and other mythologies as well.
Well, and I think that there were more clans of Aiel originally, because when Rand is in the Tarangriel and Rhuidean, you know, the gleaming columns of glass, one of the wise ones, or the wife of one of his ancestors, mentions that the dreamers have seen that those clan chiefs who do not come to the Aes Sedai and promise to do the things, so forth and so on, their clans will be as though they never were. So evidently there were more in the beginning, and they died out, or who knows what, were destroyed, or something happened during the breaking that they just didn't survive. So my impression was that they were more originally, but they have ended up with that. And of course they don't even count the Gen Aiel as the clan that's not, so I don't know how they've worked that out.
I find the correlation of prophecies, every prophecy we've heard so far mostly seems to be culminating at this time period. I'm sure there are other prophecies he doesn't bring up, but every one that does come up is as like from the Age of Legends on. It's all about this 4 to 5 year period near the last battle. And even when Egwene comes up and starts dreaming, and when Elida does the foretelling, and when Min sees things, a great deal of it has to do with this small period of time. I know it's a pivotal point in history, but I think only once or twice there's come up other prophecies, and that's like viewings about Elaine's children when they grow up, or other things like that. But why is it that every dream, is it because the pattern's so active at this point in time? I don't know.
No, I agree with you, though. There aren't really any prophecies that don't have to do with the Dragon Reborn. I hear you.
Yeah, I'd like to hear, like, in 12 years a farmer will grow a turnip, and that'd be great.
Well, at least they're not bringing up any prophecies. There may be other prophecies, and we do know of others that were sort of tangential. Obviously, I'm probably going to butcher this name, too, but Gitara Moroso, this Aes Sedai that foretold or saw the dragon being reborn on the slopes of Dragonmount, also had the foretellings that told Tigraine to go and become Shael, the Maiden of the Spear, and she told her brother Luke to go to the Blight. Obviously these were before that period of time, by 20 years or whatever.
Did she tell her brother to go to the Blight, or did he leave in protest from her disappearance?
She said he had to go to the Blight, his fame would be found there, or something of that nature. I don't recall. I'm embarrassed to say the exact wording of... But he went to the Blight because of Gitara Moroso, who evidently was in Andor advising Queen Modrellan, or whatever it was that was before Morghaes, before she became keeper to the Ammerlin in New Spring, when Siwan and Moraine are present in the Ammerlin's office when Guitar Amoroso has the foretelling and then drops dead.
You know what? We're talking about old Aes Sedai. I've got to bring up Satelanon. Did we discuss this in our previous episode? But I want to figure out more about her. I think me and Virginia talked about it when we were free talking.
Might have, yeah. I don't remember now.
We were talking in emails, that's what it was, and I was asking Bob Klutz about this. Satelanon is claimed to be Mara Tomaine's, an Aes Sedai who was known to have been burned out from having testing. She used to test Tarangriel, and then she got herself burned out and was kind of sent from the tower.
Wasn't that Martine, started with a J, Martina Janine or something like that, who was just studying the Tarangriel? I thought originally that she was one of the Amarlin that had been deposed and stilled and exiled, but I read someplace, maybe in Watt Encyclopedia, that she is the one that you said that was burned out studying Tarangriel. I think it's Martina Janina or something like that.
Bob Klutz posts on Dragonmount.com's frequently asked questions section that how come Satelanon knows so much about Aes Sedai? Is a question from a person. He goes, all the evidence suggests that she was once Aes Sedai herself. Martine Janata was burned out 40 years ago while studying Tarangriel. Most people believe that they are one and the same. However, I do remember that when Suan Sanche was being escorted out of the tower by Min, and Gon confronts her about where his sister and Nynaeve and Egwene are, she says that they're with Mara Tomaine's. I'm pretty sure that's what she says at that time. It's a name that she recalls of a friend that she hasn't seen in a long time. And there's a couple other references to that as well. And I believe Satelanon is actually Mara Tomaine's. I don't know who Mara Tomaine's was, though, so I have to look that up.
I believe that Satelanon is Martine Janata, actually. Janata.
That was the word I couldn't remember.
Yep, Janata. Martine Janata burned herself out studying Tarangriel and then left, and she ended up in... I think it was she did end up in Ebu Dar, and she marries and starts
Jasper
a new life.
Yeah.
It starts a new life as Satelanon. So.
And that's why I don't want to be an IU.
So what else can we talk about the IU, now that we've wandered all over to Ebu Dar and everything else?
Well, with the Bowl of the Winds correcting the weather patterns, does that mean the Threefold Land will always remain the Threefold Land? Or have they set the winds right in the world and the Threefold Land, along with Thruidi and the city and the lakes being formed there, will become a paradise connecting the... I forget they're called the Iad, the lands beyond the Aiel Waste, and Rand.
I think a lot depends on what happens in the last book. The Dragon Reborn is going to... a lot of people think destroy the Aiel, and I think a fragment of a fragment will remain, so I think that it's not going to be the waste any longer.
Well, there's a massive amount of Aiel in his army right now, and I wouldn't call that a fragment of a fragment yet.
Right.
I just think they're going to be the main fighting force, because, well, they're the only ones that will fight no matter what, you know. Everyone else will be busy fighting the Seanchan, probably. I don't think... Well, there's indication that the Seanchan will ally with Rand. I don't know what's going to cost or what the hell's going to happen. It's so confusing.
Well, I'm not sure that the Aiel's Threefold Land will change. I think it'll still be the Waste, because it has been the Waste since they arrived there right after the Breaking, 3,000 years, and the changes in the weather that the Dark One put into place were a fairly recent development, which actually didn't seem to change the Waste much. It just affected this side of the Dragon Wall, Rand's side of the Dragon Wall. So I don't think the Waste is going to change that much.
I mean, what once was must be again, right? So maybe the world will get fixed, but in a more gentle fashion, like a rippling. And, oh, look, old city's rising. Here's the old Jokars. Here, take a ride.
Yes, Shorel was a port. That could be it up on the mountainside. Yeah, I don't know. It says over and over again that he's likely to break the world again, so I don't know why it would be any less traumatic for, you know, the geography of the world than not, but I don't see any reason for the Aiel Waste. I mean, in every world there are, you know, wetlands and deserts, and that seems to be sort of the natural way of things.
I have to say I have much respect for Ruark's second wife. I forget her name, but she is the roof mistress of Cold Rock's Hold, and how she disses Cúlédain so coolly.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of her name
except
either.
Accepts him as a beggar into the hold.
Yeah, that was great.
It's her name is Leanne.
Leanne, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Could not remember that.
So, no, I don't.
We're gonna have to do the Watt trivia. It's all that talk of having multiple wives. I got you guys.
Wow, Watt trivia.
Do they have multiple
husbands?
Do they have multiple husbands too? I don't remember.
I think there's only one bridal wreath per woman, I would say.
That's not fair. Well, I definitely don't want to be an Aiel.
Well, don't forget, the women that marry a man are either a roof mistress or a wise one, or a maiden. I don't think there's any other job besides that, blacksmith and silversmith. Peddler, maybe. I think we've seen one trader. Maybe they have farmers, too, I'm sure, because they grow things. But I think the spear, the Algidus Esquire, are also the farmers as well. How much don't we know about the Aiel?
Many things. Well, even the Aes Sedai don't know too much about the Aiel, so I don't think we should be too embarrassed. If Aes Sedai don't know a thing, why should we, right?
Well, let's put an erroneous fact out there that each of us can recall that might have slipped other people's minds. In particular, the Aiel get along really well with the Ogier. It's a pretty obvious fact, but they have water oaths. They trade for sungwood, because sungwood is something they definitely want to get their hands on. They're very aware of it and aware of its wealth. Not sure what they give the Ogier for it in exchange, but that's an odd fact that I know. How about one of you guys? You guys remember any odd facts about the Aiel that make them especially interesting?
Yeah,
they love to buy books from the peddlers. They're big readers.
You would remember that.
I should have been a brown.
One thing that and it's a little thing, but it always bugged me is in Lord of Chaos is the wise ones take to Berylaine as if she's a sister of them. It's just a little tiny thing, but and I don't know if it's ever going to be explained or if Robert Jordan ever said why, but it's very odd that they would take to Berylaine the way that they do.
They do. They treat her like a daughter of their tents. That's what they
exactly.
say.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know there's a special relationship between Berylaine and Ruark because of what initially happened in Tyr and then also happens here in Cary Ennin, and they work together very calmly. And for some reason, maybe I think he's accepted her as a first daughter through some kind of ceremony. She sees him as a father figure, and obviously she doesn't have a father figure around from what we get the impression of. She's a very free-willed, independent woman. Maybe her father got assassinated. I don't freaking know. But I think it's very possible that Berylaine's become as first daughter to Ruark.
I understand that she might have, but I don't understand the reason why. Like, what makes her so special in the mind of the Aiel that they wouldn't think of... She's really the only wetlander that they take to that doesn't have a central part of the wheel timing of the event. So I guess she kind of does, but...
But doesn't the Aes Wise Ones and the people that took part in the first sister bonding of Elaine and Avienda, didn't everything change between them even just a subtle bit where Elaine was more accepted? Also think of how Min was accepted by the Wise Ones in that way too. She had a special ability. I don't know. Maybe Berylaine has something going on. I don't know. But if you came to them and accepted their customs and ways like Egwene did and took part in some kind of precious ceremony, their respect for you rises. I mean, you other wetlanders scoff and look down at them, but Berylaine accepts them and seeks their advice, and that's. Like, hey, you're wise enough to come to us and realize we're wise. Let's be wise together.
I don't necessarily get from it that they might have had an actual ceremony to, you know, become as in father and daughter. And I don't even know if they've even mentioned that there is such a ceremony. Just the brother and sister.
They may not have. But how much don't we know about the Aiel? We've already discovered that in this question. This discussion. But
I think
there
it's
is
just that
obvious
she...
reference. Sorry, there is obvious reference where they're talking about Ruark reflecting on her as a daughter and her looking at him as a father, and there's comments made. I think Egwene might have peeked on their dreams. I can't remember.
Well, Egwene doesn't understand the relationship either, and she's pretty well versed in Aiel relationships. She can't understand why the wise ones adore her so much either. It kind of annoys her, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
One thing that we like to do with Andrew and Carrie is say, usually the topic of the week is one person and not specifically the Aiel, but will the Aiel survive the last battle, or will they be wiped out?
Are they really Aiel? A remnant of the remnant will be saved of the Aiel. This prophecy was made when the Jhen Aiel were around, and they were the only true Aiel. So it might be considered that those who decide to follow the way of the leaf, maybe the tinkers, I don't know. But somebody has to define what Aiel is when this prophecy was spoken, and this was spoken by a true Aiel. So who's going to be servants, who's not, what are the rest of them going to do? Because, I mean, Aiel means dedicated, doesn't it? Like, you're dedicated mm-hmm. to the Aes Sedai, or the way of the leaf, or something. And the song's got to come back, and it's got to come from the Aiel. They wouldn't have introduced the song, washing the spears and stuff. I mean, something's got to happen there.
I don't know, but some of the Aiel that have been taken by the bleakness have gone to other places, such as farmatting and so forth, and basically taken on the way of the leaf as their belief system. Rand saw several of them in farmatting when he was there trying to kill Torval and Kismin and
hey,
the others.
So if somebody dies and they have Gaishain, well, you can't have toe to a dead person. Does it pass on to the next person, or are you released from being a Gaishain within the year and a day?
Well, if you're dead, you must be released. It can't pass on to your relatives.
No. Okay, I am Gaishain to you. Okay, because you touched me. Shame on you. So you pass away. Someone stabs you with a spear. Do I stay Gaishain and look for a wise one to point me to someone else? Or do I just say, oh, wait, I'm free now because I don't owe, any toe to anyone?
Wow, that's a good question. I would think it would probably break the Gaishain relationship. You can't be... I don't know how you... Well, they can pass Gaishain on to other people because Roland talks about how he never gave Fael to Savannah, so she's still his. And so maybe they make provision for that in their will if they die or something. Do Aiel even have wills? I don't know.
Yeah, but the thing is your obligations to that person when they pass on, what kind of obligation it resides? Because your obligation's not to the next person. There's constant references, my toe is not to you, why would I owe you this? You know, like, Avienda doesn't owe any toe to Oliver for the death of his parents, obviously. I mean, it's all about who you do and don't owe any obligation to.
I think that would break the Gaishain relationship once the person's died. Unless they had toe to the entire clan or something like that. I don't know. I think it would be over. I think you'd just get a break and you'd be free. Free!
I think one of two possibilities is that the toe would transfer to the next of kin, but I think in a weird kind of way it may go to the person that killed that person, go to the Aiel that killed the owner of the Gaishain.
It sounds in accord with the fifth, but the fifth is only during a raid or a conquering. So maybe the conditions change, you know, like one fifth of what that. Well, the person doesn't own the Gaishain, do they? Have they ever referred to owning Gaishain?
No.
No, in fact, they are scornful of the Sharans who sell people like animals. So, no, they don't consider it an ownership thing. It's an obligation.
The Shanchan simply require people to speak the oath, and then they can do whatever they want. You can carry a sword, you can do whatever they wander off. They trust people's word until they catch you breaking it, and then they kill you. Aiel are very much the same way. They, you know, you're Gaishain, we expect you to do what you're going to do, blah, 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 blah. They don't trust the tree killers, obviously, but they seem pretty much taking people at their honor, you know, straightforward. I find it interesting that these two cultures are so diverse but have similar code of ethics at the center of it, you know, like, your honor holds you.
I was going to say, I think the Aiel are far more bound by their honor than the Shanchan in a lot of ways. There seem to be a lot of... The Shanchan seem a little bit like Aes Sedai in some ways. They they seem to work at trying to find ways to get around what they know they ought to do a lot more than the Aiel would.
Oh, that's the high up politicians, that's why. But I mean, if you look at the Blood Guard and the Ogier gardeners and those type of people that serve Tuon and stuff, they're all about to the death. Like, anyone's got the ravens tattooed on them, it's about serving the Empress and the Empire, and there's no doubt that they're not going to do their duty. They all hope for a higher name, you know, promotion or whatever it is, but they do their service and they do not fault at it. I don't know. Again, we've had Suroth, who's a dark friend. Sorry about the spoiler. We've had Anath, who obviously is somebody special, which I won't spoil. We have...
Come on.
And then we have High Lord Turoth. High Lord Turoth, the very first guy in Falma. Freaking yep. Horn of Valir in your hands. Oh my god, this is cool. But it goes to the Empress. I'm not going
to,
you know...
I got to give it to the Empress, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to step above my station. I mean, as much as he was a bit of a stuck-up, alienated kind of, like, warlord, you know, give you this kind of overbearing feeling, he was what he was, and he filled his obligation and served only the Empress.
Stepping away from the Aiel topic for a moment, there's something that's been puzzling me for a long time. We have the One Power, and it's divided into Sidar and Sidene, which can be channeled by women and men, and it's also referred to as the True Source, but then the Forsaken can channel something else called the True Power, unless I'm mistaken. But it seems like there's not a parity. It always seems like there's a balance in the Wheel of Time world. When there's, you know, if there's Sidar, there's Sidene to balance it off, but there doesn't seem to be any dichotomy in the dark side of the power. And that's something that kind of confuses me, and I don't really understand. And it just has seems to have some similar characteristics to the One Power, except that it's far more addictive, and it causes the saw to appear floating across somebody's eyes. And I'm just throwing that out there as a possible topic of conversation.
In the Crown of Swords, I've read a lot about this. It's talked about the True Power being something only the Great Lord of the Dark, or the Dark One, could grant permission to use. It's not detectable by other channelers, like I think Virginia might have just said. It does similar things, also some things that are, you know, dissimilar. It has similar side effects, and also dissimilar side effects. What I think is it's the flip opposite of the True Source. You know, the True Source is something sourced with the creation of the Wheel, and the Creator is, you know, the provider of the True Source, and channelers obviously have been born in, with this ability, because we're all a reflection of the Creator in some way or form. And the Dark One has his own power, and, you know, I wouldn't even think the True Power is the right way to call it. I've only ever heard of the Forsaken calling that. And it was first referenced... when we were going back in time with Rand in the Ruidian ruins, which we've discussed earlier, the first Aiel, I forget his name specifically, he's on his way to see Mirian Sedai, who her and Ishmael's character are trying to bore into this True Source that can be wielded by both male and female, and then we see the bore being formed. And it was referred to as, like, this ultimate, you know, they wanted everyone to be able to use the same force. So that's about all I know about it. But my theory is it's the flip opposite of the True Source.
But it seems different in that the Forsaken can use the One Power just like anyone else who can channel, you know, in the Wheel of Time world. You know, a certain percentage of people are evidently born with the ability to channel. But it just seems odd to me that there's not more of a balance between the two. There don't seem to be a male and female side to the dark power, the true power, and yet there is with the other, and the good guys can't channel or touch the true power because the dark one hasn't given them permission, but on the other hand, they can use that and the one power, and it just seems kind of unbalanced to me somehow. It doesn't seem like everything else in the Wheel of Time world seems to be pretty well balanced. You know, for every light thing, there's a dark thing that's pretty equal. Although, I have to admit
how
that there's...
How do you define balance?
Well, I have to admit, there's another thing that is always kind of out of balance, too. The creator will take no part in meddling in the world when the Dark One doesn't seem to do anything but try to meddle. So I guess there just are some differences between the light and the dark.
Think of it this way. I guess this is where the balance would lie. The creator has created a way for man to access the true source, whether it be genetics or something else, I don't know. But they have the tools and the capacity to create a wonderful civilization and resist the Dark One. Obviously, that's what they're doing now. But the Dark One can touch the pattern. It's kind of like it's very much like the whole God doesn't really take a role in life. He just kind of created, you know, the world, let it run. And then the devil, of course, wanted to have more influence, and he goes out and he mingles and tries to corrupt men, and God trusts men to resist that, and either you live with your choices kind of thing. I think there is a balance in that, even though the Dark One can touch the world, well, the Creator touched the world by creating it, and creating it in a way that could resist him. Not only that, going back to your true power imbalance versus one power, or true source versus true power, I think there is a balance. We just don't have enough information to see it. I mean, very few people have access to the true power, and when they do, it's god-awful power. God-awful powerful. It's like, it's supposed to be really rip-roaring, like, fearful. But you've got thousands of other people that can wield the one power. So, I mean, stick 2-3 true power guys up against, you know, the 4,000 channelers in the world or more who do one power, who's going to win?
I guess we'll find out in the last battle, won't we?
Yep.
Yeah. Did we talk last time, I don't remember if this was just an off-the-wall conversation or something that we put in the podcast, about healing, severing, or being stilled, and how if Halima Sarova is channeling Sidene because she has a male soul in a female body, and if the ability to channel is linked to the soul, then what is the physical thing that Nynaeve and Dahmer Flynn are healing? What is the physical tearing? Did we talk about that? I think we did.
There was a sensation of tearing. There was no actual wound. She just got this impression of it.
But she bridged it with fire, spirit, or whatever. There was a cut spot. There was a hole.
Right.
But she was delving as though she were healing a physical wound, not something of the soul.
If you remember what I said last time, the way I perceive the powers, and this is when we were talking with spirit very heavily, is that to use fire is to influence energy, I guess. To use earth is to influence minerals, or to use water is to influence hydrogen or H2O, I don't know. But to influence spirit, the power, the true source, using that to weave spiritual things is influencing what spirit is there. So we have to acknowledge that spirit is actually a component of reality, you know, on faith alone, I guess. But when she used these weaves, I mean, you're trying to say that she's bridging something physical because spirit is not physical. Fire is physical, earth's physical, so it has to be something like a wound or genetic. I would disagree if that's what you're insinuating, because I think that if we're going to accept spirit as a component of reality and what makes up E equals MC square stuff, then fire should be able to play a role in affecting spirit and healing and earth. I mean, it's not fully explained, but I think that the spirit is a solid thing in this world. I mean, the world's woven from the threads of people's lives. Reality is not just solid matter in front of you, it's time, space continuum, future, looping, wheel, crazy physics stuff.
Well, I see where you're going with that, but if you remember, after she healed Siwan, and they dragged all the other yellows back in and made her do it again on Lyanna, and then they were talking about, later on, they were talking about it just like they heal anything else, like a broken arm or anything else, and they were going, whatever made you think of using fire and earth or whatever, oh, I can see where that might be useful in, you know, maladies of the heart or the something else. They were talking about healing as healing the physical body, and what she did seemed to be a physical thing. There was never any mention by the yellows of any non-physical component to it.
The big thing there was that fire and earth had never been used in healing. It was always water and air. Maybe,
well, not
spirit,
in this age, anyway.
Right. So the fact that she healed something, right, and it was obviously a form of healing because it was repairing something damaged. When she used the fire and earth, suddenly the other people started thinking. I have to say right here, I think it's very stupid of the Aes Sedai to just say it's... I mean, it's very stupid of many people in this series of books that do things because that's the way it's always been done. I don't know if the Black Aja had a major role, but it seemed like everyone, the most intelligent, wise people in the world, were the most ignorant towards themselves and their own history and their own potential. I mean, yeah, don't even get me started on, like, the kin, this other stuff. I mean, I think the Black Aja has been working really hard to make the tower a weak, pitiful thing.
Yeah, you may be right about that. They've obviously been infiltrating the White Tower for ages. Well, not literally ages, but for dozens and dozens of years.
So, Jason, are you having a hard time keep up with our attention deficit approach to the conversation?
No, you two are on a roll. I'm just letting you go.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't know where we're rolling to.
I'm listening just as people listening to the podcast are doing.
Yeah, my editing job isn't easy when I try to bring these conversations into a concisive order.
The people listening are probably trying to reach through their computer screen as we speak. You know, what are these people talking about?
All right, I'm going to wrap this conversation up to a close. We've talked about everything in the Wheel of Time, and we have nothing left to discuss. So this is the end of the podcast as we know it.
That will be the day. Like I said, we've got two more years of this to deal with until A Memory of Light comes out. We'll have lots of topics.
Our intention is to have more information on the new author, because many people, probably like myself, have complete ignorance as to who he is and what it means to have him writing the books. I mean, it almost feels like sacrilege to not have the man himself do it. But, I mean, we have to remember, he did probably write most of it out. He just couldn't fill in the fine gaps, which they need someone else to do. I think this book is going to be amazing. I can't wait to see it. I hope it's not 1,500 pages. I hope it's like 3,000. I'd like to see that.
Yes. Me too.
In hardcover format. And the Aiel we discussed today, I thought we were going to go into it with a bit of cocksure. Yeah, we'll talk about these guys. We know enough. We, you know, we're the knowledgeable bunch. But really, I come up thinking, wow, I'm a lot like Rand, saying, why the hell? We're not going to announce a topic of the week for next week because we'd rather just wing it. So this is Andrew Miller signing off,
and this is Virginia.
Everybody have a nice day or night depending on when you're listening to it. I do promise that the Wheel of Time Journal will be back next week. I kind of got off track and I think I skipped a whole book somewhere in there, but I promise. We'll get that back on track, and I'll figure out where we're at. So this is me signing off as well. Thanks for listening. The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com. Thank you.